All right, Tim Kirkjian of ESPN will join us here in a moment. I want to read these stats off for you. Okay, I've been referencing these Jordan Romano splits. Mike Petrillo, who's a guy who writes for MLB.com, he stumbled across it. We went to corroborate it because Grappler and I were like, is this for real? We got to check this out. Okay, here is the split. At home, Jordan Romano has a zero ERA, zero earned runs average, and the opponents have a 349 on base or OPS, on base plus slugging. 349. And that's a zero impressive ERA. Basically, this guy is a machine and he's a robot, and you're wasting your time. If Romano's on the mound at the Dome, just start leaving.
Go home. Because
he doesn't give up anything. Again, a zero ERA at home, 349 OPS for opponents. On the road, this guy is, honestly, he should be pitching in Able based on his stats, which again, it doesn't make sense, and there's not enough data for this year. But Romano's got a 7.15 ERA on the road, and opponents are hitting 9.39 OPS against him.
That kind of,
which is outrageous.
Like, yeah, the kind of like slam dunk. That kind of is wearing off.
Well, on
a little
the road,
bit,
isn't
right? it?
We just saw it the other night in Chicago, and guess what? They're on the road starting tomorrow night against a good club in Milwaukee.
But, dude, the last 2 years, you could turn the TV off, man. Didn't it seem like where that guy, you see that guy, and it's like game over.
Yep, and at home, that's still the case. Let's bring in Tim Kirkjian. Here he is, a ESPN MLB analyst. How you doing, Tim?
I'm well, fellas. How you doing?
We're doing well. We're just referencing this Jordan Romano split stat that we stumbled across online. Mike Petrillo, I guess, found a way to scoop this up. And I don't know if you heard it, but at home, Romano has a zero ERA, and opponents have a 349 OPS against him, which is effectively perfect. And on the road, he's got a 715 ERA, and opponents have a 939 OPS. Now, we're only about a quarter of the way through, third of the way through the season, not a ton of data. But can you make sense of those splits, home and away, for Jordan Romano?
No, I can't. And this is why the game is so beautiful, is there is no explanation for that. And I can tell you, having covered for over four decades, there's no explanation for a lot of stuff that goes on in baseball. And we look and we search and there's no answer sometimes. And then you go ask, like I've asked a million times, why this, why that, and nobody has a good answer for it. Guy's in a terrible slump. What's wrong with you? I don't know. Can't get out of it. Then they get out of it. How did you get out of it? No, I'm not sure how I got out of it. This is why the game is so great, is that it just defies description. Things happen that just make you slap your forehead. I knew Jordan Romano was better at home than he was on the road, but I didn't know the splits were that ridiculous.
Tim, you mentioned slapping on the forehead. Toronto fans were slapping themselves on the forehead with just the ump and the percentage of missed calls the other night. When that situation happens and it's publicized, like their miss rate or their wrong rate, like what do those umps do with that? Is it just like they pick up they pick up a piece of paper after the game and they have a beer and they're like, ah, tough night, or like what happens with that, if anything?
Well, the umpires are rated all the time, and they get the same data that you guys get all the time. And yes, some of them must look at it and say, I didn't even realize it, but I must have had a bad night. Now, I'm going to upset you guys. It's a really hard job to umpire a major league game. I maintain the average fan wouldn't last 10 pitches back there without saying, that's enough. This is too dangerous. This is too scary. Get me out of here. So that's not to say that umpires don't have bad nights, because they do. And home plate umpires have a difficult job. And it really hurts a team and a player certain nights. And I'm not saying, hey, we'll just look past it. But I'm just saying it's a really hard job. And I have a little sympathy for umpires when they miss some, because the game moves so quickly now. It's so much faster than it was even 20 years ago. You better be ready if you're going to work the plate. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to do it. Buck Showalter used to tell me, we should just get the 30 best home plate umpires, or the 15 best, and let them work every game behind the plate. Now, he was joking, of course, because there's no way physically you could keep up with that. But yes, there are problems out there with young umpires and sometimes older umpires who miss some calls behind the plate.
Well, that was happening in Chicago, and we were somewhat enamored by Tony La Russa and his whole history, and we call him Top Step Tony because he's always up in the top step yelling and snapping. And, you know, he's dealing with a weird scenario though in Chicago. I mean, his legacy is what it is, and yet the other night on Tuesday, the White Sox led the game, the whole game, the opener on Monday. They got to Berríos and they held on. They had a lead on Tuesday, and then the second it flipped, the second the Jays took the lead, the fire Tony chant started. Like, the second they jumped on Tony La Russa. How is that going to be sustainable for the rest of the year if the home crowd is constantly chanting to fire the manager?
Yeah, it's not a good situation. And I'm sure deep down inside it bothers Tony La Russa because that's where he started his career. By the way, the first game that Tony La Russa ever managed was against the Blue Jays, and Danny Ainge was the second baseman, which I still find to be absolutely hilarious. So that was just a little aside. When you hear fire Tony chant, that's not a good situation. But from all indications, Tony La Russa isn't going anywhere. Jerry Reinsdorf is the owner. It's his dear friend. Jerry said the worst mistake he's ever made in baseball was firing Tony La Russa the first time. They're not going to fire him this year from all indications. And as long as they win, and they're going to get better than this, they have to get better than this, I think things will turn around and things will get better. But you guys are right. At the first sign of trouble, we're going to hear similar chants.
With Tim Kirkjian of ESPN, is the New York Yankees chasing 116 win narrative, is that realistic for you? Is that something worthy of talking about at the end of June, or do you need another month or two before we can realistically make that a goal for the Yankees?
We need at least 2 months to make that a goal. Look, the Yankees are really good. But they're also in a really good division. The Blue Jays are very good. So are the Rays, and so are the Red Sox. And the Yankees are going to have to play all of them. And, yes, six teams in history have won 50 out of their first 67 games like the Yankees did. It has been stunning. But 116 is a ridiculous number. And with some of the injuries the Yankees have, especially to their pitching, I don't see them getting near 116 wins. However, I think they're going to win the division. I just don't see that many wins.
Tim, we did a segment earlier in the show about looking forward to certain things in the summer, and one of the topics available was the Jays' summer. What could possibly happen with them? If you could look into your crystal ball, what do you think happens with the Jays, or what kind of transactions do you foresee them making?
Well, like every other team out there, they're going to need another starting pitcher, especially with Hyun-Jin Ryu out for the season. Frankie Montas, just to throw a name out there, had a no-hitter going today for the A's. He's really good. I think he'll move, and I think maybe the Blue Jays will be one of the teams that looks into acquiring him. You know, every team is going to be out looking for bullpen help because there's all sorts of bullpen arms available because there are a million relievers out there. So I fully expect the Blue Jays to do something. I'm not sure they're going to go out and get a really big offensive player. To me, at least, they have enough offense to carry the load. But I think they'll go look for a pitcher, but the problem's going to be so's a bunch of other teams. So will they end up with somebody? I'm not so sure.
With Tim Kirkjian of ESPN. So this is another stat. I mentioned we were talking about the splits with Romano that don't really make sense. Here's another one that isn't necessarily a direct stat of this player in particular, but it's a comparison to other great names. What we just witnessed out of Shohei Ohtani over the last couple of days. So these are the players who have never had an eight RBI game in their career. Babe Ruth, Hank Aaron, Barry Bonds, Albert Pujols. Here are some pitchers who have never had a 13-strikeout game. Lefty Grove, Catfish Hunter, Jack Morris, Tom Glavine. That's courtesy of ESPN. Ohtani did both in consecutive days. He had 8 RBI a couple of nights ago, and then last night he had 13 Ks. Can you put this into perspective, not only what he's doing recently, but over the last couple of years?
Well, no one, maybe you just said this, but no one's ever had an 8 RBI game and a 13 strikeout game in their careers, and he did it on back-to-back nights. So maybe we have to look at this. Has any pitcher, has any player ever had back-to-back performances like that in team games? I would say that that would be, the answer would be no. No one's ever done in back-to-back team games what Shohei Ohtani just did. I mean, it's remarkable to do it from both sides of the plate. Now, again, Johnny Vandermeer threw back-to-back no-hitters, so maybe that's comparable, but those weren't back-to-back team games. He had time in between starts. This guy did it one night as a hitter and then the next night as a pitcher. It just, again, reinforces how remarkable this is, and I tell people all the time, I hope we understand what we're watching, because we've never seen this before, and we may never see anything like this again. And those two games this week, to be that good as a hitter and that good as a pitcher on back-to-back nights, is just preposterous.
Well, I found myself a lot of times, you know, this year just handing the MVP to Aaron Judge because of how great he's been and in conjunction with how great the Yankees have been. But if Ohtani is pitching better than he was last year, he's not quite hitting at the same rate, but there's a lot of time for him to catch up. If he ends up with close to 40 home runs, an OPS up over 900, and an ERA around 3, how does he not win the MVP again?
I think he will win the MVP again if he has a season like he did last year. Now, he didn't get off to the same start, and it's not the same story because we've seen it before. I think part of the reason he won unanimously last year is we've never seen this. Well, now we have, but I think the writers are going to look at this and they're going to be voting for the player of the year because that's really what the MVP is now. So I think if Ohtani has the same year he had last year, I think he'll win the MVP again. And I'm sorry, I have a little problem with that. I don't think we should be appointing the MVP before the season begins. And I had a bunch of writer friends tell me, I don't care what anyone does in 2022, if Ohtani has that year again, he's the MVP of the league. And I certainly understand that rationale, but let's say Aaron Judge hits 62 homers. Let's say he wins the RBI title and the Yankees win 110 games and go on to win the World Series. How can that not be an MVP season? So we're in for a really interesting time and an interesting vote if both of those things happen.
Yep, and they very well could. Always great catching up with you. Thank you for doing this, Tim.
Okay, fellas, see you.
Tim Kirkchin of ESPN. Yeah, those are Ohtani stats, man. Like 8 RBI insane. And then follows it up with 13 strikeouts the
it's
next
crazy.
Day. Yeah, yeah, like I've never seen anything like it. I don't care what the sport is. It's crazy.
There's other people voting saying, I'm giving it to Ohtani. It's like, how could you do that?
Well, and he makes a good point. Like, let's see how the season plays out for sure. But the nature of the vote last year, like, Vladdy was off the charts, but it was like, you don't have a chance, man, because look what this guy's doing. And if he's doing it again, it'll be interesting to hear and to read the explanation for why someone wouldn't vote for it again. Like Ohtani fatigue, because he's already done it, now all of a sudden we don't care? I don't know.
But this guy is such, he's the most unique player. He's one of the more unique players, well, for sure, modern
ever.
Day.
Of all
right?
time, yeah.
Like, it's insane.
Did you see the home run he hit the other night? Like, this guy isn't batting ninth and just, hey, he can hit too. And he's hitting .210 with 3 home runs on the year. Like,
he's
a machine in the box. Like, he steps up, you're terrified.
He's gigantic, too.
He's huge.
He looks like he's 9 feet tall in there. I thought he was just kind of standard height. I saw him the other day, and I was like, God, that guy is a beast.
He's a monster. Yeah. And he turns on baseballs, man. He crushes the ball.
You remember when Pujols was in his prime, how he had that kind of stance in the box where it was just like, this guy is menacing? Ohtani seems like such a soft-spoken dude, but when he stands up there, you're like, that is scary as hell.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Big time.
He's 6'4", 210, they got it listed at. Like, that's a, you know, it's a pretty big man.
That's a giant on the mound, too, yeah. Man. Like, that's another thing. This guy's 6'4 on the mound. You're like, look at this beast throwing at me.
Yeah.
Like, he is
That's what makes Manoa so imposing. Yes. Is that Manoa's like 6'6", correct? Like, that's...
So imagine if he had 15 home runs and was batting like 290. Like, that's it. Imagine
crazy.
Manoa, but he also hit like third in the lineup and crushed baseballs.
That is insane.
Like,
it really is.
To put that into... Or Vladdy had a 97-mile-an-hour fastball. like it's impossible. You make it a joke because you're like, well, Vladdy can't pitch. Well,
right.
Ohtani can. Well, yeah. Manoa can't hit. Well, Ohtani can. You know,
it really is.
Why can't you do that, Manoa and Vladdy? Like, why doesn't Vladdy have
it is pretty
an
freaky,
arsenal
man.
Of pitches? It's crazy.
Vladdy have an arsenal of pitches.
Ohtani
that would be
does.
So funny. Like, it is. But would that put him as, like, one of the, I mean, it's a unique player, but one of the greatest players to play.
I like, think greatest I mean, athletes, like greatest athletic feats ever
right.
is what we're witnessing. I mean,
like Bo Jackson played multiple sports, Deion Sanders, like there's been guys that do multiple sports. Now, were
right.
they as dominant with multiple sports?
No.
Sanders wasn't Sanders a good baseball player?
Deion was okay. He was a good defender and he could steal bases.
Right.
You know, like he was a good base runner, but I don't think his stats were overly impressive.
I feel
point.
Like Bo Jackson was. I remember all
Bo
I can remember
play.
In my mind, they were trying to intentionally walk Bo one time, and he reached across and cracked the ball because he was pissed that they were intentionally walking him.
He could play. Like Bo Jackson could legitimately play ball, and
yeah.
he had a great arm. He was a great defender.
Yeah.
He hit for power, and Bo was, you know, as a running back before he got hurt, was
yeah.
unbelievable.
Apparently Gretzky was a great pitcher, great baseball player.
Right.
But
there's a lot of multi-sport athletes, but this is, you know, this is like Wayne Gretzky also being Grant Fuhrer's backup.
That's true.
You know, and being
plays
really
net,
good.
And plays on the power play, too.
Right. Like, yeah. Ohtani could be, he could win the Cy Young and, you know, the batting title. Like,
yeah.
It's almost impossible to put into perspective.
It is
what this
crazy.
Guy's accomplishing. It's crazy.